She'd forgotten it, as usual, and rattling the letterbox. It's not what I mean because... Thank you, Mary. She went into the hall. Is nurse back?
Yes'm.
And has the fruit come?
Yes'm. Everything's come.
Bring the fruit up to the dining room, will you? I'll arrange it before I go upstairs. It was dusky in the dining room and quite chilly, but all the same, Bertha threw off her coat. She could not bear the tight clasp of it another moment, and the cold air fell on her arms. But in her bosom, there was still that bright, glowing place, that shower of little sparks coming from it. It was almost unbearable. She hardly dared to breathe, for fear of fanning it higher. And yet she breathed deeply, deeply. She hardly dared to look into the cold mirror, but she did look, and it gave her back a woman, radiant, with smiling, trembling lips, with big, dark eyes, and an air of listening, waiting for something divine to happen, that she knew must happen, infallibly. Mary brought in the fruit on a tray, and with it a glass bowl and a blue dish, very lovely, with a strange sheen on it, as though it had been dipped in milk.
Shall I turn on the light,
No, thank you. I can see quite well. There were tangerines and apples stained with strawberry pink, some yellow pears, smooth as silk, some white grapes covered with a silver bloom, and a big cluster of purple ones. These last she had bought to tone in with the new dining room carpet. Yes, that did sound rather far-fetched and absurd, but it was really why she had bought them. She had thought in the shop, I must have some purple ones to bring the carpet up to the table, and it had seemed quite sense at the time. When she had finished with them and had made two pyramids of these bright round shapes, she stood away from the table to get the effect, and it really was most curious. For the dark table seemed to melt into the dusky light, and the glass dish and the blue bowl to float in the air. This, of course, in her present mood, was so incredibly beautiful. She began to laugh.
No, I'm getting hysterical.
And she seized her bag and coat and ran upstairs to the nursery. Nurse sat at a low table, giving little Bee her supper after her bath. The baby had on a white flannel gown and a blue woolen jacket, and her dark, fine hair was brushed up into a funny little peak. She looked up when she saw her mother and began to jump.
Now, my lovey, eat it up like a good girl, said nurse,
setting her lips in a way that Bertha knew, and that meant she had come into the nursery at another wrong moment.
Has she been good, Nanny? She's been a little sweet all the afternoon, whispered Nanny. We went to the park and sat down on a chair and took her out of the pram, and a big dog came along and put its head on my knee, and she clutched its ear, tugged it. Oh, you should have seen her.
Bertha wanted to ask if it wasn't rather dangerous to let her clutch at a strange dog's ear, but she did not dare. She stood watching them, her hands by her side, like the poor little girl in front of the rich little girl with the doll. The baby looked up at her again, stared, and then smiled so charmingly that Bertha couldn't help crying.
Oh, Nanny, do let me finish giving her her supper while you put the bar things away.
Well, she oughtn't to be changed hands while she's eating, said Nanny, still whispering. It unsettles her. It's very likely to upset her.
How absurd it was. Why have a baby if it has to be kept, not in a case like a rare, rare fiddle, but in another woman's arms?
Oh, I mustn't, said she. Oh, I must, said she.
Very offended, Nanny handed her over.
Now, don't excite her after her supper. You know you do, and I've had such a time with her after.
Thank heaven. Nanny went out of the room with the bath towels.
Now I've got you to myself, my little precious, said Bertha, as the baby leaned against her.
She ate delightfully, holding up her lips for spoon and then waving her hands. Sometimes she wouldn't let the spoon go, and sometimes, just as Bertha